It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes will be here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. As the snow slowly begins to melt, some of the topics we'll cover include starting transplants indoors and the effects of the prolonged snow cover on plants, plus rabbit, deer, and vole damage. We're talking plants. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and the conversation takes root just after the news. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander. We're talking plants. It's Horticulture Day, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life, anything you want to grow or grow better. Listeners, call in with your questions at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Richard and Cindy. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. We're doing well.
Oh, good. Well, let's start with what I talked about in the billboard going into the program, starting transplants indoors. I gather this is something prepping for planting is what I would call this. Is that accurate?
Basically. And to do that, you need certain supplies. You need some type of container like a flat. You need a germination medium like Jiffy Mix. You'll need good quality seeds. Once they germinate, typically we put them in a sunny window, but oftentimes they don't get enough light in a sunny window. And so it's better if you have some type of artificial lighting. You can use a inexpensive shop light where you have two 40-watt tubes in that light and then position that fixture about maybe 4 or 5, 6 inches above the ceilings. And that's going to give you a lot more light than in a sunny window.
Okay, and what kinds of seedlings should we be thinking about?
Right about now, you want to start things like, for example, petunias, impatiens. They have a fairly long crop time as far as from seeding to planting outside. And then you can wait a few weeks on things like tomatoes and marigolds because they grow much faster. But as far as right now, basically things like impatiens, petunias,
vinca,
geraniums, those would be things that you'd want to start inside right now. And possibly also things like cabbage and broccoli, the cool season crops that we can plant in outside around mid-April.
Okay. Listeners, if you would like to ask questions about transplants or anything else, other plants in your life, 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call. We have an email from Sally in Fairfield. She says, as soon as the snow is out of the way, is this a good time to trim out excess old branches at ground level for forsythia and red twig dogwood bushes?
Well, with the forsythia, they bloom in the spring early on the previous year's growth. So typically with those, you want to go ahead and let them bloom first and then prune those immediately afterward. As far as something like a dogwood, the flowers on dogwood aren't that ornamental, and so we tend to prune them basically sometime in March before they leaf out.
Okay. And we have another question I wanted to ask is getting back a bit to the transplant sort of in that area. Is this a good time to replant houseplants that look a little rough right now?
This is actually a really good time to repot houseplants or cut them back or kind of do any of that kind of major, severe, possible, you know, stress that you would they would incur in doing this. So now's a great time because you're entering into that season where they could actually grow a great deal and recover quickly.
How big a pot should they move into?
Well, anytime you're repotting, you just want to go the next size up. So just a little bit, maybe, you know, less than an inch or two in diameter larger. So just a little bit at a time. Because many houseplants like to be a little bit pot-bound. Sometimes they flower better that way or will just look healthier. If you go too large a pot, then it's a tendency to keep it a little too wet. And sometimes that's when crowns or some roots will actually rot, and then you'll see some damage.
Okay, so a little bit cozy, not too much, but just a little bit cozy for them is what they like.
So if it's time to repot them, just go to the next size pot up, and then you're usually good.
How about, is it a good time to fertilize them now?
Fertilizing, I usually say, starts at about April, so I would wait a little bit longer on that one, especially if you're repotting a houseplant or cutting it back. You want to give it a couple of weeks to kind of reestablish and then maybe start the fertilizer.
Okay, and then move them outside in the summer. Is that a good idea?
It's an okay idea. Some of us have houseplants that are really large and we almost have to move them into a, you know, a patio or deck or someplace outside. Keep them really shaded, though, because if once you have to bring them back in the fall, they'll go through a lot of leaf loss if they've, you know, had a really sunny spot out on the deck. And then they can also burn very quickly if they're going from inside to outside in the spring. Mm. And don't take them outside into the spring until it stays, you know, in that May time period, so mid to late May. So we still got a couple of months to have them indoors.
Okay, so temperatures would be about what then?
Temperatures, we need temperatures really above 40 and 50 consistently.
Okay.
Night temperatures and before you can take houseplants outside.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Cindy Haynes and Richard Giron joining us for Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We'll go to Ann in Cedar Falls. Ann, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Well, I am a person that tends to kill everything that's live in my house. And I was given as a birthday gift in December a Norfolk Island pine, and it said that I should maybe just spray it or spritzer it from top down. It is dying on me. I don't know exactly what to do about it.
Well, Norfolk Island pine, it's probably not dying because you're not spritzing it or you're not spritzing it correctly. It's a plant that prefers very consistent care, fairly consistent moisture, consistent light levels, a very consistent warm temperature. So find a bright location near a window, water it well when you water it, and then when the top starts to dry out just a little bit, it's time to water again. It probably doesn't require misting, per se, to increase the humidity, but if you do have a humidifier in the house, that would probably help it, especially in the winter.
Okay.
And the problem with Norfolk Island pine is if anything goes wrong, or if it doesn't like anything, then it, you know, any aspect, it will drop a lower limb, or that limb will turn brown. And it doesn't just drop little needles. It usually drops a whole branch. And it usually starts at the bottom and works its way up. So that's its sign that it's not happy, that maybe, you know, you need to pay a little more attention to it.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Anna. Good luck with it.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Ray in Mason City. Ray, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question for Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes?
You were just talking about, you know, the getting things ready for the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't mention grow lights. I have a cart that's got a bunch of grow lights on it, and I wonder if that would be a good place to.
Oh, sure. Sure, you can use grow lights. I was just trying to maybe suggest a very inexpensive way of doing it. But if you have a grow light system, that's great. If you have a cart, that's great.
Okay. I thought it was, but I just thought I'd better double check.
Well, we're glad you did. Thanks,
Thank
Ray.
You. Bye.
Bye-bye. Margaret in Kelmar is on the line. Hello, Margaret. What's your question?
I have a hibiscus. It is about approximately 6 feet tall. It's on a standard, so the trunk is about an inch in diameter.
Sounds
and
beautiful.
And then, well, sometimes it is. I transition it into the house in the fall and into the basement where it does get as much winter light as possible. Mm-hmm. There's some large windows there. If I forget about my hibiscus and don't water it in the winter as regularly as I should, it obviously gets sick and pale and the leaves drop, but it blooms like crazy,
right,
which I think is maybe a survival technique.
Partially.
So I've tried to be a little bit more consistent this winter and watering it, and now the leaves are beautiful, deep, green, plush, and that is without even feeding it. However, now when I transition it back outside onto my patio, what I see happening in the summer is the leaves are turning sort of just a pale, icky green. And I just need to know what's going on with my hibiscus.
Well, anytime you transition from indoors to outdoors, the plant Every plant has the ability to produce different types of leaves based on its situation. And the leaves don't look any different, but they're constructed a little bit differently to maximize light harvesting, which in whichever environment they're in. So in your basement, it's probably not getting as much light as it ever does outside. So when you transition it outdoors, it's saying, okay, those leaves that I produced in the basement aren't effective anymore. I need to produce some new ones that are constructed a little bit differently to be more efficient. So it's just...
I don't understand. I'm sorry. I don't understand why it's getting so green right now. It's the lushest, usually in March in the basement. It's the lushest that I ever see it. And then when it goes back out on the patio, it gets kind of pale green.
Right.
And I'm assuming that's okay.
It is okay. It produced shade leaves indoors, and in March we get the intense light, and those shade leaves are just being very efficient and maximizing on photosynthesis, so there's lots of chlorophyll, so they're very green. And then when you take them outside, those shade leaves aren't working as well, and they're being actually overloaded. And then the plant produces sun leaves, which are a little more efficient in a sunny environment, and so given that time that it can transition, a couple of weeks, maybe a month, it will recover, and all those sun leaves will be fantastic for the time that it's out on your deck. And then, of course, the cycle happens again when you bring it back inside, because those sun leaves aren't efficient indoors anymore. It needs shade leaves again, so it'll drop all of those and produce gorgeous shade leaves, which will
all make sense.
Yeah, it all makes sense, and it'll work. It's surviving, and it's actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. So,
well, thank you for your expertise.
Well, thanks for calling in. I'm glad you have a healthy hibiscus. We'll go next to Bill in Dubuque before we go to a break. Bill, welcome to Horticulture Day.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okie doke. For a couple of years, I've been trying to propagate a lilac bush, and I know there's two ways to do it, either by layering or by cutting six-inch new wood
cuttings.
And rooting it. Cuttings, yeah. I want to know when I should do which, and can I do anything now to get ready for that?
And I would add a third way of doing that, where where you can actually dig up little suckers that come out around the perimeter of the plant.
This one doesn't do that.
Oh,
is there any way to encourage that?
Okay. Well, some don't, and many do, but some don't. Well, as far as the cuttings, what I would suggest is waiting and let the plant put on some new growth in the spring, and let that new growth kind of partially harden, and probably go out sometime around mid to late June.
Okay.
And that's when you take your cuttings. You take the cuttings from the new growth, maybe 6 inches long.
How thick?
They're going to be about pencil size and thickness.
Pencil.
And I'll finish that later on.
We're going to come back, Bill, and we'll continue to answer this question. We just have to take a very short break, and we'll be right back with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes. They'll be here calling at 1-866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes are here to answer your questions about the plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Before the break, we were talking about lilac bushes and the best time to prune, and Richard, you were going to complete your thought on that.
As far as propagation, right. As far as cutting, so it's basically mid to late June. We've taken off 6-inch cuttings, and then at that point, pinch off the lower leaves on the cutting, and then dip the cut end or the cut ends in a rooting hormone. It can be a powder or a liquid, and then root those or stick those in either perlite or coarse sand, and keep that material moist. And once you've inserted those, if you have a large plastic bag, a clear plastic bag, place that over the cuttings and the actual container so that the cuttings don't dry out and die. And then place those in bright light but not direct sunlight. And within probably 6 to 8 weeks, they should root, and then you can pot them up and you have new plants. You can also air layer the plant, where you go out with a knife And you can do this in the spring. And you simply cut the bark down to the wood, and you go all the way around the stem, all the way around it, down to the wood. And then you make a second cut, maybe a half inch or an inch below the first one, and you do the same thing where you go all the way around the stem down to the wood. And then you make a third cut where you connect the two, and then you kind of peel off that bark. And then you take some sphagnum moss, and you put that in a bucket and add some water and let it absorb the moisture. And then you take out one or two handfuls and squeeze out all the water you can so it's just damp. And then you place that sphagnum moss completely around the stem where you made the cuts. And then you take some clear plastic again, put that around the sphagnum moss. And you want to make sure it all basically is in the middle of the plastic, that none sticks out above or below the plastic. And then you place a twist tie on top and a twist tie on bottom. And what that does, basically, it will cause that stem to form roots while it's still attached to the parent plant. And since you're using clear plastic, you can actually see the roots as they begin to fill out or grow in that sphagnum moss. And when you see you have a good root system, you simply cut it off below the plastic, and you take off the plastic and pot it up.
All right. Thank you for that. Bill, I think, probably took the answer off the air. And we'll go next to James in Iowa City. James, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of peach trees that I planted last summer. They were suckers off of a co-worker's peach tree that grows here in Iowa. And they've made it through the winter, but they have... I just stuck them in the ground. They had no pruning done at the time. And right now they have about 3 competing leaders. And I was wondering if I could cut those off next to the trunk at any time after now, I guess, or when I should do that.
Well, how big is the plant in total as far as height?
Oh, about 2 feet. 2.5 feet, somewhere in there.
Okay. I guess I would probably do that sometime late in March.
Okay.
Where you go out and you examine the plant very carefully. You decide which one is the most vigorous.
Oh, I've already
the best.
Done that.
Okay. And then take off the rest. And what you might want to do is, before you do that, examine those very carefully just to make sure that they haven't suffered some type of damage.
Okay.
For example, we can see rabbit damage because they've been feeding above the ground, above the snow.
Sure.
But voles are basically mice-like creatures, and they feed below the snow. And so examine those very carefully and make sure that the one that you're going to save is actually completely healthy.
Okay. Well, they've had fencing around them since I put them in, so hopefully they'll be okay. But I'll check them.
But okay. I would do that later on in March.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks for calling, James. We appreciate it. You're listening to Horticulture Day with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes. 1-866-780 is the number to call. That's 1-866-780-9100. That's the complete number to call for your questions about anything in your life concerning plants. 1-800-8-1-866-780-9100. We'll go to Carol in Mason City. Welcome to the program, Carol. What's your question?
Question concerns a banana plant that I've adopted for a friend, and it's about 8 foot tall. It has set bananas.
Wow.
And it has a large red pod on it. Now, do I remove the pod to get more vigorous growth on the bananas? How much should I be fertilizing it?
Well, they have some rather odd flowers, and that red pod-like thing, I think, is the male flower on the banana.
So, too.
So I would just leave that on there. But as far as fertilization, basically probably once or twice a month would be fine. I would just use a water-soluble product like Miracle-Gro. That should be okay.
Okay. And about how long does it take for the bananas to mature usually?
Boy, I can't really answer that. It really kind of depends upon the growing conditions for the plant.
Okay.
And so in a house environment that's not the best, it's going to take longer for them to mature.
Actually,
it's hard to say.
Actually, it's near a swimming pool.
Oh, it is.
Hmm. So we've got high humidity and the east light.
Okay.
Oh,
that's
good. Sounds ideal.
That's good. And then once it's basically done producing, it's going to slowly die. That's what bananas do, and it will produce offsets are daughter plants, and they will grow and eventually produce bananas.
Okay. Thank you for telling me some of the characteristics.
Well, thanks for calling in, Carol. We appreciate it. Good luck. Bye-bye. We have an email here from Mary in Ames. She talks about she would like to add the Newport cherry plum to a friend's landscape. She says it will survive in Zone 4, but is a southern native. And although this is a beautiful ornamental tree, I have no experience with it personally. Will it thrive here?
It should do okay, but I would classify that maybe as a fairly short-lived tree, that it may be a nice fixture for maybe 15, 20 years, but it's not going to be like a 100-year-old tree or anything like that. So as far as planting it, just make sure it's a well-drained soil. They do not like wet, poorly drained sites. They don't like wet feet. So make sure it's a well-drained site and basically full sun.
Okay. She says, is there another choice which would be better?
Purple foliage, that's kind of hard to come by.
Well, there's Cotinus.
There is.
But it might not be as hardy as the plum.
And there are some choke cherries that have purple foliage.
Oh, and there's ninebark now.
Right, which is a shrub. So you have some choices on that. But I can think of the choke cherry. Those are fairly common as far as Canada Red, Schubert. They have purple foliage, too. So
okay, and she asks, will netting protect the tree from what for a possible onslaught of Japanese beetles this summer?
I think I would just look the other way and ignore it.
Oh. Because, maybe nothing will protect
because
Japanese.
It's very hard to protect trees and shrubs from Japanese beetles unless you're prepared to go out there and build like a fence or structure around the entire tree, which I don't think is very feasible, or spray about every other day or whatever. So I think I would just kind of look the other way.
Okay. All right. We're coming up on a break pretty soon, but we'll go to Craig in Cedar Rapids. Craig, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, I'm very anti-chemical, and so I wondered what you thought about using 1 quart of lemon juice concentrate and 1 gallon of white vinegar as a spray for crabgrass, and, you know, it probably would take a bunch of other stuff out too, but it's very green, and it works really good.
Well, if I was concerned about crabgrass in my yard and I didn't want to use a chemical, I would go to the garden center and see if they have a product that contains corn gluten meal. That's a natural product. It's a pre-emergent, and it prevents the seed from germinating as far as the crabgrass seed. And it's widely sold. So that's a good way of doing it if you don't want to use a chemical.
Well, this is a lot cheaper.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to really work like the corn gluten meal. There is some solid research on the corn gluten meal. It's a scientific fact that it does control crabgrass, and I would prefer that rather than trying something that may not work or may have some unintended consequences.
Thanks, Craig. We appreciate the call. We're going to take about a 5-minute break, but when we return, Horticulture Day continues with Extension Horticulturists Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes. They'll be here to take your questions about the plants in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org.
Congress hasn't done it, so the EPA is. This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. By the end of the month, the Environmental Protection Agency is expected to issue proposed rules for reducing the greenhouse gas emissions contributing to climate change. The Obama administration has said it would prefer Congress pass climate change legislation, but the EPA is moving ahead with its own rules under the Clean Air Act. This week, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson told a congressional hearing only the very biggest emitters of greenhouse gases would have to get pollution permits at first, and then not until next year. Joe Kanchelik is an environmental lawyer with the firm France Ward in Cleveland. He says even then, not every big power plant and steel mill will have to get a permit.
That's triggered only if you are building a new plant or you make what's considered a significant change to an existing plant.
And if a company is required to get a permit, it's not clear what they'll have to do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Eric Schaefer is a former EPA official and now heads up the Environmental Integrity Project.
The standard is best available technology, and I haven't seen EPA's definition of that yet.
More than likely, the biggest emitters will reduce greenhouse gas emissions through using fossil fuels more efficiently or mixing in biofuels until ways are developed to capture emissions and store them underground. This is the Environment Report. You might think a nuclear power plant would have the tightest pipes imaginable to keep radioactive liquids from contaminating water underground. But the truth is, dozens of reactors have leaks, and sometimes it took years to find them. Sean Ali found one leak is raising questions about how nuclear power plants are regulated.
Anti-nuclear activist Susan Shapiro tells me there's a problem with the Indian Point nuclear power plant north of New York City. It's leaked radioactive water into the ground.
It's not contained. They know that. In fact, their answer was just let it leak, continue to leak into the groundwater. That was their ruling. For years, it might have been leaking. We know it's been leaking for the last five, because that's when we found it.
The radioactive water that's underground is getting into the Hudson River, and there's this company that wants to build a desalination water treatment plant downstream from Indian Point and the contamination. Lately, they've had to file important paperwork.
Neither one refers to the other. The desal plant doesn't mention Indian Point, and Indian Point doesn't mention the desal plant. How can they not mention it?
The water company says tests show that its water will be safe. It'll be well below federal limits for pollutants, including radioactive ones from Indian Point. The federal agency that regulates the Indian Point nuclear plant agrees. It says it's looking into that paperwork discrepancy, but in the meantime, it says people should not worry. Here's Scott Burnell, a spokesman for the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
By virtue of the vast quantities of water that are traveling through the Hudson, any isotopes that would make it into the river would then automatically be diluted to several orders of magnitude, meaning they would no longer be capable of posing any sort of public health risk.
Indian Point is just one nuclear plant that's leaked radioactive water. At least 27 reactors have leaked. The NRC says at least 27 because in some cases, power companies don't find or report leaks like this for years. Burnell says the NRC makes companies inspect pipes that are closely related to safety.
We do not, however, have the authority to enforce a standard that goes beyond what is necessary to safely shut down the plant.
So the bottom line is that the NRC says it won't change its rules on leaks because it feels the rules are effective now.
That's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham.
Support comes from the Park Foundation, the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. You can find more information and post your comments at environmentreport.org. The Environment Report comes from the University of Michigan.
This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes are here answering your questions about any plants in your life, those you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have Mike from Des Moines on the line. Mike, welcome to the program. What's your question?
For Christmas, I got these arrow gardens. And one of them I was growing herbs. The other one is growing plant, like flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that's growing flowers recently has a lot of bugs growing, like little tiny white bugs.
Okay.
Are they
flying around or are they just kind of staying on the plant?
They're just staying on the plants and actually the leaves are starting to die because
okay.
of it.
Uh-huh.
I read online to rinse it underwater and get rid of the bugs. I've done that like three times, but they keep on coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea of getting rid of them?
Well, it could be aphids or something like, or even mealybugs. Maybe not just rinsing it, maybe spraying it, because this isn't an edible crop. These are the flowers. Maybe
yeah.
you can spray them with a little bit of soapy water. So a little bit of dishwashing soap like Dawn or Palmolive and water, and then just kind of give them a bath with a
okay.
sponge and wipe it off and then rinse it. The problem is you have to be persistent with this, so you have to do this two or three times, maybe a week apart, because
okay.
you need to get, you know, successive generations of the insects.
And you can also buy insecticidal soap at most
mm-hmm.
garden centers, so it's already made up for you. You just spray it on.
Right.
Okay, good idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the insecticidal soap on the product that you're going to eat.
Yeah.
So the vegetables, but on the flowers, you're probably just fine.
Okay, great.
Thanks for calling, Mike. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
bye. Bye-bye now. We'll go to Carrie in Urbandale. Carrie, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I have several jade trees that last summer started drooping, and I wasn't overwatering them. I mean, one time I had the experience where I left them with the bottom on outside, and I did have to cut one off. Right. And these are very old. They're over 20 years old, and I tied them up, you know, with stakes, and then I... all summer, and some of them perked up a bit, but two of them are still very droopy. Should I just cut them off and start making a bunch of new plants, or change the dirt? Or
well, I think they do get a little droopy, and you're right in thinking that maybe it's water related, because they will get a little droopy when they're staying a little too wet. Check the soil to see if they're staying too wet or too dry. That may cause it the other extreme equally as much. I would also check with jades. They actually like quite a bit of light. So maybe check that they're getting plenty of sunlight in their location or some bright direct light. Maybe that will help.
Yeah, I had them outside all summer.
Yeah.
Full sun.
Yeah. And that's kind of where they would prefer to be. And maybe they're just still droopy indoors because they are indoors. As a backup plan, I'm going to tell you probably to take a few cuttings or take a few leaves so that you can propagate as cuttings, just so that you have a backup, because these are large and you've had them for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And just in case something happens.
Something bad, yeah.
Something bad happens, I'm sorry to say. If you want to investigate later this month, maybe, or next month, you can do some investigative research and dig this up and see if there's anything happening at the roots, if there's any root rot or something that maybe happened. This would be a good time to do that, and then maybe repot them into, maybe the same size container with maybe some fresh soil. But be careful. Be careful.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Should I use a lot of vermiculite in it to keep the soil looser?
You could. You could put some vermiculite. With a lot of succulents, I like using some coarse sand because I often put succulents like jade in slightly smaller pots than maybe what they are typically used to, because they do like to be a little pot bound. So the sand adds some weight. So they don't tip over as much. So maybe I would tell you, if you're going to repot it, repot it in the same container or just a very slightly larger container, and then maybe add some sand to it to make sure that it's well-drained and you have that additional weight.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Carrie. Good luck with your jade. It sounds beautiful. All right. We do have an email from Al in Fairfield. He says, because there was new construction, there is a great deal of bare soil and soil that is partially covered with pioneer plants. Should I plant rye or other grass to keep the soil together and prevent the ground from being overrun with weeds? And when should I seed lawn grass? So that's Al's question from Fairfield.
Well, I think what I would probably do is wait until maybe around mid-April and maybe go out there and lightly till it, and then rake it, and then go ahead and seed at that point. You want to wait until the soil has warmed up before you sow the grass seed. So I'd be inclined to wait until about mid-April on that.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call for Horticulture Day. Richard Turan and Cindy Haynes, our extension horticulturists, are here answering your questions. Or you can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Randy from Iowa County is on the line. Randy, what's your question?
If I wanted to bud graft some, say like some honey pear buds onto another pear tree, or possibly plums from one species to another. Mm-hmm. When do you do that?
It depends upon the method. Usually it's done in early spring, but it really kind of depends upon the method.
You might have March, you might have this time frame to do it, but obviously when it starts to bud out or leaf out, it's too late.
So there's two methods of doing it.
Well, there's a lot of different ways of budding and grafting. A lot of them are done in early spring before the plants start to leaf out.
Yeah.
That's when many of them are done.
Do you cut up and down the stem and then kind of pry it back like you're opening up a little book? And then you put the new bud in there.
Right. That's called a T-bud or T-budding method. And, yes, that is one popular method where you just kind of open it up like you would your cardigan sweater.
Mm-hmm.
You cut a T, and then you insert the bud in the T and then kind of wrap it up together. T-budding and grafting are pretty tricky, though, and success rates are usually not as high as taking cuttings, but...
if you're going to do the cutting, how do you do that? You don't just take a knife out and cut it, and I don't know how to do it, so I'm a novice wanting to know how.
Okay. The problem with taking cuttings is you wouldn't have multiple trees on the same plant. Is that your objective?
Well, if I'm using, say, a Bartlett, and I want to put honey pear buds on the Bartlett, so I'd have two different kinds of pears on the same tree.
Right.
Or
right.
And it's a different kind of pear tree that came up in the field. They're little bitty hard things.
Uh-huh.
And I thought maybe that'd be a good 12-year-old tree to put some bud grafts on.
Right.
And then you'd have your honey pears sooner than you would if you planted a new tree.
Yeah, I would probably suggest that you maybe visit your public library and look for a book on plant propagation, where they discuss some of these grafting methods and budding methods.
And you can see pictures. And,
right, where you have pictures, drawings showing you how to do it. And as far as the size of the plant material, that kind of dictates what you do as far as what grafting method you might use. For example, if it's if the branch is 1 to 4 inches in diameter, you would typically use like a cleft graft. If it were like an inch in diameter, you might use a side graft. It really kind of depends upon the plant material as far as the size and other things. So I would look for a good plant propagation reference book that really shows me diagrams, pictures, and tells me which method might be best in my situation.
And you can take a look at T-budding as well. And I think what you're describing is a T-budding, and you
yeah.
can see if that's going to be a possibility.
Well, I'm down here in Iowa County. I don't know, if anything's different than up 4 or 5 counties farther north or 4 or 5 counties south.
It shouldn't be. Not for grafting and budding so much.
Thanks, Randy. Good luck with the grafts. We appreciate the question. We'll go next to Kevin in Truman, Minnesota.
Yeah,
hi, Kevin.
Hello?
Hi,
yes.
Kevin. You're in Truman, Minnesota. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hey, I bought some sweet potatoes last year, and I planted them, had a good crop, and I've got some potatoes left over, and they're sprouting, and I'm wondering what will happen if I use them as my potato seed this year.
Well, it's something that you can do. We normally recommend that you buy new ones each year, and the reason we suggest that is that when you save potatoes from the previous year, from your previous crop, they might have a virus or some other disease that may not be apparent by looking at them, and so they may not produce as well. And so we normally suggest that you buy new ones because they are certified to be disease-free. You don't have to worry about that aspect of it. But you can do it. You can definitely do it. Now, if they're sprouting now, I'm not sure they're still going to be in good shape by the time you plant. They typically sprout when it's too warm. And
okay.
So the way to prevent them from sprouting is to keep them at a consistent temperature near 40 degrees. At that point, they really won't sprout. But when you have temperatures in storage that are like 50, 55, they're going to sprout very quickly. And before you know it, they'll kind of shrivel up, and you really won't have much within a few weeks. So that's the key, is to keep them in a dormant state where they're actually not sprouting or growing.
Okay. If I do end up planting some of these, will the crop be as good? I mean, will the potatoes be as big?
Well, it depends upon the weather conditions and other factors during the growing season, but potentially they can be, yes.
Okay.
They definitely can. So But if,
well,
if
they're diseased, anyway.
Yeah, if you have them, you might as well try.
You know, if they're diseased, obviously all bets are off in that they may not produce much at all.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Kevin. We appreciate the call. 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call for Horticulture Day. Cindy Haynes and Richard Geron are extension horticulturists answering your questions about the plants in your life. Or you can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Once again, call in at 1-866-780-9100. We have an email from Larry. Will you please have your guests restate the recommended distance between fluorescent lights and plants when starting plants inside?
Yeah, I typically shoot for around 4 or 5 inches, no more than maybe 6 or 7. And that's because as light travels, it spreads out. And so you want as much light as possible. So you don't want the fixture 2 or 3 feet above the plants. That's way too far apart.
Okay, and we have another question on the indoor lighting. A few weeks ago, you mentioned, this is from Jeff. Not sure. He's from Rock Island, Illinois. He wants to know, a few weeks ago, you mentioned for starting plants indoors to use one warm and one cool fluorescent tube and a dual fixture for less fluorescent light. He's wondering what a warm and cool bulb is.
Well, you can find those typically in some of the larger home centers, and they emit certain types of light. So you have the cool white and you have the warm white. And if you combine the two, you get the various wavelengths of light that the plants really need. They like certain wavelengths, and those two, when you combine the two, kind
of get them both.
You get them both.
So, you just have to look on the label.
Right.
One will say cool fluorescent, the other one will say warm fluorescent.
Okay. He's mentioning a 3100 Kelvin bulb for warm and 4200 Kelvin bulb for cool. Does that make sense?
We're looking at each other going,
it doesn't
make any sense
okay.
to us. I'm
all
sure
right,
it does
all right.
to
But anyway,
else.
All right. all right. We'll go next to Harvey in Twin Lakes. Harvey, welcome to Talk of Iowa and Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Thank you. I have a question. I put some flower seeds in Colorado last summer that I'm going to plant in a flower plot. And the person that sold them to me told me that I should freeze them for a week to 10 days before I put them in the ground and that they'll produce better that way. Would you confirm that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what they meant by that, but many annual seeds typically don't need a special pre-germination treatment, but there are some perennial plant seeds that do. And so one way of doing that possibly would be to, you know, maybe go ahead and pot them up and water them in, and then maybe place those in the refrigerator for maybe a couple of weeks. Because some perennial plant seeds like some cool temperatures to induce germination. So you might try that. I wouldn't put them in the freezer per se, but maybe in the refrigerator.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Harvey. We appreciate it. If you have a question for Richard Geron or Cindy Haynes, 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call for Horticulture Day, or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Crystal in Coralville says, how soon can I plant the cool weather crops such as radishes and spinach? If I use a hothouse, how much sooner could I start to plant?
Well, if you have a hothouse, you can actually be planting things like a greenhouse. You can be starting things now. But we usually like the cool season crops. We plant around mid-April outdoors. And some of those seeds we actually sow in the garden. And then things like broccoli or cabbage or cauliflower, we start indoors and then plant transplants in the garden.
Okay. We wanted to talk about a bit of the effects of the prolonged snow cover on plants. What are some things to be mindful of?
Well, one big thing would be the rabbits and the deer.
Right.
Because they haven't had a source of food available to them as far as on the ground. So they've been feeding on trees and shrubs. And as people get outside this weekend, after being inside all this time and walk around the yard, they may see quite a bit of damage, unfortunately.
We're seeing quite a bit on campus.
So, for example, if you have like a crab apple or an apple, and if the rabbits have simply destroyed all the bark down to the wood, and if they've done this maybe a foot, maybe higher on the trunk of the tree, basically those trees are girdled, and those trees basically are going to die. Mm-hmm. They may sprout from below where the rabbits have been feeding, but if those suckers come from the rootstock, they're not going to give you the desired tree. And so in that case, it probably would be best just to go ahead and dig up the tree and plant a new one. As far as the shrubs, they may have girdled quite a few stems on certain things, like, for example, burning bush or winged euonymus, on hydrangeas, on various types of shrubs. But the nice thing about shrubs is those are propagated by cuttings typically, and they're growing on their own roots. Mm-hmm. And they will also sucker. So even though these girdle branches will eventually die, you can cut those off, and the shrubs will send up new shoots from the base. And so it may take them a couple of years to recover, but eventually they will. So they've been severely damaged in many cases, but they will survive. So that's good news.
Okay, sounds good. All right, we'll go now to Roland in Muscatine. Roland, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to start a new tree from a branch. Is that best to do when it's dormant?
Well, trees are kind of hard to produce from a branch. What kind of tree did you have in mind?
Well, I'm going to tell you it's a curly willow, but I don't know for sure.
Oh, those are much easier. That's good. That's
piece
good.
Of cake.
Piece of cake. All you really have to do on those is I'd probably go out right now, and I would cut out my little branches.
Or twigs.
Not very big. Mm-hmm. Maybe pencil size and thickness or so. And then I would bring them inside and put them in a plastic bag and place them in the refrigerator. And that way they'll stay dormant. And you might put a little bit of peat moss around them, damp peat moss, so they don't dry out. But then leave them there for a couple weeks. And then in April, as soon as the ground is workable, take them out of the refrigerator and put them in the ground. Just stick them in the ground and keep the soil moist. And there's a good chance they'll root very easily. No problem. So, but it's nice to do it that way so that what you stick in the ground in April is still very dormant. And it's going to take a while for the actual branch to leaf out, which gives it a time or a chance to develop a root system before it does that.
Okay. A couple of years ago, I cut a branch off, and I just stuck it in a jar of water, and it sprouted and grew. And that's how I have my 15-foot tree now.
Oh.
But I couldn't remember.
You can do that, too.
I couldn't remember if I did it in the spring or the fall.
Well, they're pretty easy.
And probably either one would work.
Yeah, either one will work.
Willows have preformed root initials.
Right.
So they are one of the easiest things to propagate via cuttings.
Yep.
And is it called a curly willow?
You can call it various names, but yeah, it has contorted or twisted willow. Yeah.
Okay, great. I have another question.
Okay.
I have a what I call a tree, but it's kind of a plant that I've had for 10 years. I put it inside in the winter, take it out in the summer. It's been called a Jerusalem cherry tree. It gets tomatoes on it.
Okay.
Do you know anything about that tree?
I don't think it's a true tree.
I'm thinking of Jerusalem artichoke.
No, I don't know
Jerusalem cherry.
I think it's more a perennial type plant. There's like ground cherries.
Oh, ground cherry and things
tomatillos and huckleberries and
okay.
There's a lot of those different plants that belong in the tomato family.
Okay.
And I'm guessing it's one of those type, but I'm not sure exactly which species it is.
Okay. A lot of people have told me when they saw it that it was poisonous.
I believe that might be the case. Some of those are, so you want to be kind of careful with those.
Yeah, there's a lot of members. The tomato family is the Solanaceae or nightshade family, so there are a lot of members that are poisonous.
And I believe,
fortunately, tomato's not one of them.
And this is more of a house plant versus a outdoor fruit plant.
That's probably true. Mine's about 4 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks for calling, Roland. We appreciate the call. Marcy from Johnston, you have a very quick question. We're almost out of time. I'm sorry.
I can go quick.
Okay.
I have a butterfly bush that I hope will grow again this year. Mm-hmm. We've lost two butterfly bushes in a row because we cut them back in the fall. This year we didn't cut it back.
Good.
simply let it grow. Mm-hmm. Want to know if we should prune it or what should we do?
You probably will have to prune it. There will be some top dieback. I would just kind of wait until you notice where it's coming out from the base,
okay.
And then prune the dead that's out. So,
oh.
And the snow cover was
should have helped a lot.
It was a great idea this year for it. So you should have at least about a foot down there.
Oh, good.
It's
standing tall right now, mm-hmm. which is amazing.
But
so.
But that top part that above the snow cover will probably die.
Okay.
You'll probably be cutting it back to about a foot.
Oh,
or somewhere
to a foot,
around there.
Huh? And when would I do that? Like in April or?
Yeah, about April or May, let
okay.
those buds kind of swell and to see
okay.
where what part is still living. So cut it above that.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for calling, Marcy. We appreciate it. And it's another Horticulture Day, but we'll be back next week on Friday on Talk of Iowa. Thanks very much to Cindy Haynes and Richard Giron. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our producer assistant today was Christina Sarnelli. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.